Hi, Grandma.
Hi, Zoe.
I have some questions for you about your life.
Oh, how interesting.
Can you tell me how you would like people to remember you?
Well, I think I'd like them to remember me as someone who really loved them and cared for them.
Who are the people you love?
Well, first, of course, are my sons and their children.
Can you tell me about your parents?
My parents were unusual. My mother was wonderful. She was a very kind of driven woman in a way. Very efficient and always working to help others. My father was kind of a mystery. I think he had a lot of anger. And from being abandoned when he was about 13, he had family, but not really close family at that point.
Your parents, they were immigrants, right?
Yes. My mother's parents were from Faial and Pico, Portugal, which are islands in the Azores. My father was from the Alentejo, which is on the mainland Portugal, and very in the Cork region where they grew cork.
Mm-hmm. So did your dad immigrate with his parents, or was he born in the U.S.?
No, he came here when he was 13, probably with his father, okay, or at least his siblings who were older.
Do you have any stories about your parents that like describe them to you?
I think of my mother, it's really, she did a lot of work for people in the town of Gloucester, city of Gloucester.
Mm-hmm.
And she stretched curtains. She had four children, and then World War II, my father enlisted when he was in his 30s. And so my mother had to raise us during the war in Gloucester, Massachusetts. And I can always remember having some sort of job. She cleaned house for a certain group of people, and she even completely redid a piano as far as the surface. You know,
would you go with her to the jobs, or would she?
No, we never.
While you were at school?
She had very good friends. And when we were older, my sister Natalie, who was the oldest, she got a lot of clothing from the girls, her girls, who were older than we were. And what did you ask me again? What did she say?
Were you with her like when she was doing her jobs?
No.
When you were growing up, what role did religion and spirituality play in your life?
Well, we were forced. Not forced, but we had to go to Mass. We were Catholic. And we walked across town when we moved to the other side. The four of us would walk across town and go to church every Sunday. So I think the part of it that was good was the being aware of a higher power or a more spiritual element to life. Life wasn't just not just one dimension of I want this, I want that, or whatever.
So were your parents more religious?
Not at all. My father was born in Portugal in a time when the government was against religion. And so therefore it was more from my mother's side. My grandmother was classic little Portuguese religious woman. She would light candles at night and put them on her bureau, candles to the Holy Spirit.
Did you have a strong relationship with your grandma?
Yes, I was her favorite granddaughter. Of all the grandchildren, I was the favorite. I remember she went to Washington to see my Aunt Rose, and she brought me back a beautiful little red check dress. I was about 5, and everybody else got something different, but not as nice.
Um, Do you have any like teachers or like adult figures that stand out in your life as like people who influenced you?
The mentor type. There was one in San Francisco. I went, took a writing class, creative writing class, and the professor really liked my work. So he wanted me to get a master's in creative writing.
You said he had a crush on you?
Well, maybe. I also had some artist friends. I took classes at the San Francisco Art Institute, and I'm afraid two of them had crushes on me at that age.
You were popular.
I was. Then, now I'm an old lady, so you have to live with the reality of aging.
How was your love life when you were younger? Like when you were in like your teenage
in high
days
school,
or college?
I had a boyfriend. My first boyfriend, I was 16. Mm-hmm. I had other boys that I kind of had a crush on, and they had a crush on me. But my father was very strict, so there was no hope of going out on dates. So
was he a good boyfriend, your first boyfriend, when you were 16?
Yeah, he was nice, but in those days, I can't believe it that I would even drive with them. But all the boys would pick you up in their cars, but they're very courteous. They would open the door for you and help you get in and close the door. He was very respectful. Boys were a lot more respectful then, I think.
Yeah.
That doesn't make them better, but they were respectful.
Yeah. So,
women were treated like princesses or goddesses, but they weren't respected. Like men, you know, you didn't discuss things.
Why did you join the Peace Corps?
Well, part of it was as an alternative service because it was the Vietnam War.
Yeah, time. Wasn't Grandpa enlisted or he was being?
He'd signed up, yes, but he didn't have to go because he had a child. No, wait a minute.
No.
He didn't have a child then. I'm trying to think.
Wasn't he getting?
You didn't get drafted.
They
if
were.
You were married
they were drafting
first.
Him, and then he went
first,
to the.
He never. He instead of being. He never got drafted because they didn't get to him because he was married. They went first. It was if you were married, you didn't have to go yet, and then if you had children, that would hold you back. But it was that he was. So, but he decided it would be better to do an alternative service, which was the Peace Corps. Plus, I was up for the adventure and
what did you do
hopefully helping others. Both of us were teaching English as a second language. Mm-hmm. The first year, we were way out in the country, in the middle of the jungle, and I taught math and English. And when I left, the next year, the ones I taught English to had math, and the ones I taught math to had English, so it was like, what was I doing? But I had an interesting time. The great thing about the Peace Corps was that I was able to look at another culture in terms of itself. I didn't press my ideas upon them. We were trained anyway. You go to training, mm-hmm. and they make you culturally aware.
Yeah, you learned, what language did you learn when you were trained?
Tagalog?
Tagalog.
You mean the language?
Yeah.
Tagalog, which is useless. Mostly they teach the
Oh yeah,
dialect.
There are like 42 languages there, right?
A lot, could be more. But they're actually, they're not totally different from Tagalog.
Do you still remember it?
Only a little, yeah.
Is there any like story from the Peace Corps that like is really like memorable?
Yeah, the birth of my son. He was one of the few.
Was he born when you were in the Peace Corps?
Born in the Peace Corps.
Oh wow.
Yeah, they didn't allow it. You had to go home if you got pregnant.
Well, how was the delivery?
I had a Chinese doctor and he was like the most patient person you've ever seen. It was fine.
How?
Except that he was 9 pounds, 2 ounces.
Big
and
baby.
They said, the thing they said when he was born was, you Americans really are big. And he had a little birthmark on his, a red port wine stain on his lips. And they said, ay, nako, which means, oh my gosh. And because it for them, it was like a bad sign almost, like, you know, your past life or whatever they felt was.
So did you find out you were going to be a mother when you were in the Peace Corps?
Yes.
How was that?
Fine. They were, I was in.
Was it just, you were just like, okay?
Yeah. I was glad. But, oh, and he was born in a Chinese hospital. And when the baby, new baby is born in the hospital, they put it in the front so everybody can come and see him. Well, so many people came to see Sean in the front that they now, instead of, they put the baby to the right once the next new baby came in. But so many people came to see him that they just kept him in the front and kept rotating the other row of babies. And they were about half as big, I swear. They were so little, but cute, beautiful. So
yeah. Well, how did you meet Grandpa?
I met him at a party. A friend took me to a party. She went to an art school, and so they had the party, and...
That was in San Francisco, right?
Yeah, he was there. Somehow we became friends.
How soon after did you get married?
I don't know, maybe about a year. Not sure.
Do you think he was the love of your life?
I don't know that I had a love of my life. No, he wasn't. But at the time, we had a very happy marriage until it ended, which was not so happy. Yeah. Anything else?
Not much more. Why did you marry again?
I was 24 or so, 23, 24. Mm-hmm. And in those days, a lot of kids got married right out of high school. But, so at 24, I thought I was a spinster. No, I felt old. I felt old because that was now people marry in their 30s. Mm-hmm. A lot of people. And so it was kind of the thing you were brought up to in those days, too. Eventually, you would marry mm-hmm. and be a wife.
It was like the point.
Yeah. Although I did go to college.
Yeah.
And I...
Which was lucky.
Yeah. It was unbelievable. The four of us were very poor. Not poor in the, you know, like horribly poor, but we didn't have a lot of money. We dressed well and had good food. But I didn't go to Smith College because I got accepted hadn't completed the application either. I don't know how I ever got in, except my grades were good. But I couldn't afford to go. Mm-hmm. I should have somehow tried. My mother gave me a good loan the first year at Simmons College. And that was a hardship for her, that she took out that loan. And so I'm thankful to her for that.
What was it like when your mom died?
Actually, she had been sick. She had been at my sister's house for about 10 years. Where she couldn't walk or anything, Natalie. Mm-hmm. So, and her brain was different from chemotherapy.
Oh, did she have cancer?
Yes, she had lung cancer. She smoked from age 16 because people in that area, that time, mm-hmm. thought that it was sophisticated and they got hooked and it was okay to smoke. People didn't realize the effects.
How do you feel, this is kind of a switch up, but how did you feel affected by this, like, election, the recent one?
Oh, it's been a really hard 2 years, or 2.5 years.
Almost three.
It was traumatic, and I mean traumatic. Mm-hmm. It took away a lot of gaiety and lightness of life until I finally got to the point where I said, I can't live this way, you know, with this constant anxiety. And yeah, and the problems still occur over and over again. New things crop up, new destructive elements to that election. And but I finally said, I've got to enjoy the life I have.
So then what was the most hopeful election for you? Like the election that was...
I think Barack Obama, to me, was an amazing election for many reasons. First of all, he was a total gentleman. And brilliant. And I like that he was part white, part black. Because what we need is the final acceptance that color does not matter. It's what's important is This was one of the most gracious men, and his wife was one of the most gracious. They are elegant, you know, people. So I think that was, what did you ask me?
Oh, how you felt. That was the most, like, hopeful election.
Yeah. And not only that, he worked for everybody. He worked for everybody. He didn't just work for the billionaires of this country.
Yeah. He was a good president.
I think he was. Clinton was a very good technical president.
What was it like when Clinton was president?
It was normal living. Normal. You didn't feel like, oh my gosh.
Like it wasn't just, super new or changed, but it was good.
The president we have now has gone through a checklist of everything that Obama did and eradicated it as much as he could. And that I find horrifying.
It's hard to see that much change at one time.
Yeah, and all
especially
negative.
Especially when it was very good before.
Yeah, the negativity. There was not much, I mean, the debt ceiling has gone way up. Mm-hmm. And billionaires are much more rich. They're rich, you know.
So this is also very off topic, but why do you think you're psychic?
I don't value psychic as a thing. Mm-hmm. It's not that I'm psychic, I'm intuitive, which means I know things about people and about situations.
Yeah, I feel like we got that. I think I'm psychic too.
And I feel patterns. So it's not like psychic woo-woo. It's more intuitive. I know when things are going to happen at times.
Is there any like certain memory that you have of like something happening where you feel like you knew it was going to happen before it happened?
Yes, but I can't think of specifically. Okay. But it's more, I know, my aunt died. Before she died, I had a dream that I was in San Francisco. It was a double store, like two stores put together. Mm-hmm. And in the dream, I went down one side of it into one side into a back closet, like, or a storehouse, storeroom. And there was a wire hanging down, and a boy came in and started to reach up and touch the wire and the light that was, I said, don't touch that. You'll get a shock. And what it was I realized later, the next day I found out my aunt died. And the little boy was my brother, and he's the one who called me to tell me that she was dead. So that was one thing I thought was pretty clear.
Yeah. Was she electrocuted?
No, she just died from a heart attack, which is a form of electrocution in a way. You know, it can be electrical short in your body or whatever. Not electrical like electricity, but it's what's working is not working. It's short-circuiting.
Are there any other dreams you really remember? Like your youngest dream?
My youngest dream, I don't remember. I have young memories.
Well, the dream that you remember, like the youngest.
But there's one dream that's very powerful. Two dreams. One is that I was in the dream. There was a woman, and she looked like someone from the 1500s. She had a Dutch kind of face, and she was walking up in the Alps, walking up high through the woods near a stream. And then all of a sudden, a man came up over the stream and choked her to death. And her body was lying in the stream. And then I was watching, it was like watching a movie. And then a young man from the village, I felt there was a village down below, came up and saw her lying in the water. He ran over to see who it was or what was happening. And at first he had crossed himself because he was going to help her. Then when he saw who it was, he left her there to die, to just rot. And from behind me, a voice said, she was the Papal Duke's courtesan. You know what a courtesan is?
No, what's a courtesan?
It's mistress.
Okay.
But those are the words I heard.
Oh.
She was the papal duke's courtesan. And so I knew afterwards, and it's so weird because I kept knowing what the story meant for years. I'd say, oh, they were up in near Italy, Switzerland, and this one other place, France. They kind of meet up in the Alps and on the borders. And I said, and then I knew that she was from the village. She was what they would call beautiful on that day. We wouldn't think so. We'd think she was plain almost.
Yeah.
And she was the mistress of the papal duke, who was not nice to the people. So the people of the village, who were her villagers, hated her. And so they had someone kill her.
Did that actually happen?
No. This is what I know happened. And
that's
the
so
continuation
weird.
Of the dream.
So what do you think it was like representing? Do you think it represented anything, or do you think it was just a dream?
Well, dreams are never just a dream. They always have meaning. But this one was so different. It was so like a movie outside of me, but yet I knew I was the person. It might be.
Were you the papal duke's mistress?
Yeah, at one way back in the 1500s. But I think it was, I mean, and I don't believe it. The rational side of me just doesn't believe it. The other part of me, I feel like probably was a message of some sort, but I don't know.
Do you think you're the reincarnate of the papal duke's mistress?
Well, I kind of, if it's true, if reincarnate, and I empathize with it or whatever. I mean, I really feel that the things like if you love France, some people love France, some people hate France. They may have had a good life or a bad life, or they may have had no life, but metaphorically it's true. It means something in terms of where you are right now.
So does that like connect to your spirituality?
Yes, because it means that we're more than what we think we are. We're not just a being going through an ordinary life. We're a being who's going through time. We're light going through time, trying to reestablish the light within us so that we can help the world improve.
So do you think that's the point of life?
Yes. I think it is. The growth, it's evolution, spiritual evolution. There's physical evolution. But I do think we're here for a reason, for spiritual evolution.
Then what do you think about how the world is growing today?
Right now, we're in the Kali Yuga.
The Kali Yuga?
Which in the Buddhist kind of thinking, it's a wheel. We're on a wheel. And the wheel goes around and around, and it doesn't change. And I guess the point of evolution spiritually is to raise the level of the whole world, to help to raise the whatever this journey is of humans on this beautiful earth, which we're not taking good care of. But that's the point. The point is to evolve, to change, to become more loving. Love is the one major factor, and light, love and light. Those two things I think are very important. So I've tried to eliminate negativity, and nobody's ever successful. Kali Yuga are the ages the world goes through, according to the Buddhists.
So
there are dark ages and
highs and lows in time.
And right now we're in
the dark ages,
but we're at the edge. It's superating. It's like when you have a sore on your hand and it's all infected, then it breaks and begins to heal. I hope that the world is like that right now, ready to break. It is breaking out all over. And maybe eventually people will finally be so shocked by their own evil or their acceptance of evil. They in themselves are light, but they choose evil.
Is there any story that you remember that people told you when you were a kid? Like a fairy tale type thing?
Mostly I read so much. Yeah, I loved all the fairy tales. There used to be colored fairy tales. Blue fairy tales, red fairy tales. So I would try to read my way around the library. It was a small library for kids. But I loved them.
Is that why you wanted to be a teacher? Is because you loved reading so much?
Actually, I never wanted to be a teacher. I would have liked something more with writing or art, you know.
So why did you choose to be a teacher?
Because then? In those days, I trained.
Well, yeah, because you're the Peace Corps.
Yeah, but before that, at my school, I couldn't get one professor because they were starting a new school of education at Simmons College. Mm-hmm. And they brought over people from Harvard who were great teachers. And they were teaching us through the Socratic method, totally by asking questions. And so because I couldn't get that one teacher, because they were restricting him to just the new education people. Oh. That's why I went into education.
So you could get that wonderful teacher?
Yeah, I was signed up to go to New York. I was going to eventually go to New York at that time. And there was a school of communications at Simmons, and I would have gone to New York and worked in advertising. And then I was also going to go to the Boston Museum of Fine Arts. They had a program with Simmons. So that was my intention, but because I couldn't get that professor, I switched.
Do you regret that decision?
Not really, because the thinking was good. You know, I mean, I learned to think. That one professor I wanted, he was catalytic. He made your brain, like, he was one that could connect everything. What?
Do you think he changed you as a person?
Yes. Well, I had a German teacher, too. The two of them were just like these integrative beings. They knew they could connect everything together. They knew so much about the different kinds of knowledge all over the place. It was good. It was great.
Were there any students you had that, like, stand out in your mind?
Yeah. They were, there was one in the high school. She went to Brandeis, mm-hmm. like Sean. And she just understood the deeper meanings within something. She just got it. Most of the kids are learning and they learn, but she was right there. She did very well at Brandeis, you know, and she even taught there for a while. So that's one. But I had these boys too that they kind of mixed in my mind. They were really amazing kids. I read Macbeth with a fifth grade class, kind of horrified at the horror in it. But this boy just went around he was out in Oakland, California, from a very lower middle class, no, you know, just a nice family, and but not an intellectual family. And he went around for weeks with the whole volume of Shakespeare and under his arm, reading.
In fifth grade?
And he read the whole thing, yep.
Oh my God.
And then I had another boy who reminded me of him, who was very similar, almost the same type. They were very bright kids.
So if you could go back and change something in your life, what would you change?
I don't know if I think I would wish I'd gone to Smith. That's the only thing.
Yeah.
Just because the quality of it. Simmons was a really good school, but Smith, it's just fantastic, you know.
If you could change one thing about the world today, what would you change?
I would like people's hearts to be fuller. I'd like them to have more love and less of the seven deadly sins that they live by. You know, people are mostly good, and some are not. Some are mostly on the other side, the dark side. But I wish that people could see the value in love, honesty, that kind of thing.
Thank you. Thank you for interviewing with me.
I hope it was okay.